We were enemies. And the challenge when I was growing up was, they was your enemy. And you know, they tried to kill you, you need to kill them. That was the image, the message that I got when I was growing up. But coming to America, grow up in the faith, I said, if the church does not rise up to the occasion to teach the word about loving your enemy, we don't have the message. And so that was my experience in Budapest. We're going to see that. DVD is about 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and then I will share my testimony. Okay?
When the Vietnam conflict ended in 1975, North Vietnamese Army moved south, claimed the victory, and unite the country under one flag. More than 200,000 Vietnamese left the homeland and resettled in the United States and other Western countries. This was the beginning of the first worldwide exodus in the history of Vietnam. Today, there are about 2 million Vietnamese living overseas. Vietnamese immigrants, although assimilate to the new land, always have a deep longing for their homeland. Everywhere they resettled, they tried to form a community with small businesses such as malls, stores, restaurants, shops, and community centers. The Vietnamese Christians living in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, not only looked to God to establish the church in the new land, but also looked to Him to send out missionaries to reach other Vietnamese in other lands.
1979, many Vietnamese were sent to Eastern Europe as international students, researchers, and overseas workers. 1989, the Berlin Wall fell. The new job opportunities is open to rich Vietnamese who are living in Eastern Europe. 1996, I was sent here to Budapest to reach out to the more than 3,000 Vietnamese who are living here in Budapest.
I was introduced to Dr. Nguyễn Toàn. He was a graduate student at the Technical University. Tuan came to know the Lord through the ministry of Pastor Paul Held, an American missionary. Together, we meet every Saturday for prayer, preparing the Vietnamese gospel tracts and visit the market where most Vietnamese make their living. The copy machine was given to us by a missionary from Korea who was formerly working among Chinese. The gospel tracts were prepared by a Christian group in California.
We visit this market every week, sometimes three times a week, to invite people to come to our Bible study.
Every Sunday at 6 o'clock, we would not go to the market, but sit in our living room and waited for God to answer our prayer by bringing people to our service. We rejoiced every time we heard the bell ring and opened the door with much anticipation. To reach out to the Vietnamese in Budapest, we started several projects such as teaching Hungarian to new arrival, teaching English to young people, and outdoor activities for children. Several of those who participated became good friends, and some committed their life to the Lord. Most Vietnamese here are animists. They worship their dead ancestors. They burn incense and offer food to these spirits every month, especially at the full moon. When they decided to turn their life over to the living God, they remove their altars and start a new life. They testify their faith and identify with Christ by water baptism. They faithfully come to worship service each Sunday and form the nucleus of the Vietnamese church in Budapest. The new believers also introduce their family member to Christ and invited them to church. The core of the Vietnamese church is established, and this fellowship is growing through the power of the Holy Spirit. For the past 15 years, Hungary have gone through a period of transition from a centralized economy to a market economy. This major change brings rewards and consequences, winners and losers. Some Vietnamese took advantage of this newly opened market economy and become quite wealthy. First, they accumulate money by selling luxury goods such as cigarettes, perfume, wine and liquor to the status-conscious Hungarian. They sell garments imported from Vietnam, China and more recently from Turkey. As in any emerging economy, fortune were quickly made and also easily lost through foolish investment, gambling, extortion, and drug abuse. There are some efforts to establish a Vietnamese community in Budapest, such as building a shopping mall, organizing traditional holidays such as Lunar New Year and Mid-Autumn Festival. In recent years, they also organize other activities such as tennis club, women club, and veterans associations. These are attempts to deal with the greatest challenge: to establish an identity in a small country which just joined with the European Union. The sense of alienation is prevalent in this place. Hungarians hope that eventually the Vietnamese will assimilate into their society. But this slow and difficult process is yet to happen. Breakdown in family relationships are quite common, as children do not speak the same language and parents do not share the same values. Many are longing for home, but it is a distant dream, and few have made a real attempt to resettle in their homeland. Another challenge facing the Vietnamese here is a sense of restlessness. Every morning, most of the Vietnamese here get up at 5 o'clock to prepare for a day at the market. They usually do not get home until 5 in the afternoon. They work 7 days a week and only close their shop when there is a national holiday. They are constantly thinking about new, inexpensive, and easy to make products. The third challenge facing the Vietnamese here is a sense of purposelessness. For the newly arrived, the main goal is to make money. For those who have children, the aim is to provide a good education. For those who become wealthy, their main existence is to create more wealth. Alienation, restlessness, and purposelessness are not new problems. The gospel of Jesus Christ is sufficient and ready to speak to them. To the homeless, Jesus Christ is a waiting Father, welcoming each and everyone to His eternal home. It is in knowing Him that we have eternal life, and in serving Him that we have perfect freedom. To a restless person, Jesus is a haven of rest. For those who come to Him, He promises that they will find rest to their soul, and His yoke is easy and His burden is light. The person who does not have a purpose in life needs to listen to the word of Jesus. I am the way, the truth, and the life. In the last 8 years, I have tried to echo the voice of John the Baptist as a voice in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord. I cannot say that it was always easy or people were willing to listen to the voice of the gospel. There are people who turn a deaf ear right from the beginning. There are those who came to hear, but because of pressures from their families and friends, have turned away. There are those who also listen, but the desire to make money became so strong that they no longer have time to listen to the word of God.
We are the believer, we are a voice in Budapest. For those of you who support us, we'd like you to rejoice with us and lift up your voice and worship in God. For those of you who are interested in our ministry, we would love to hear from you. I'd like to know how much time I have. So, 40 minutes, okay. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share with you my story. Thank you for expressing an interest in hearing about this story. In a sense, it is my story, but the storyteller is God. It is about how the grace of God is moving and working in my life, and He is working and moving in your life in mysterious way. And that's why we're here. Long before American government sent troops to Vietnam, long before President Gerald Ford signed a bill that allowed people like myself from South Vietnam seeking asylum in America, long before that, God had worked in the heart and the mind of American, Scottish, Canadians, godly people. They dedicated themselves to the gospel, and then they went to Vietnam. Their testimony and their life have such a powerful impact on my family, on my great-grandfather, that he became Christian. And his children became Christian. And then my parents grew up in the faith, and I grew up with many opportunities to come to know the Lord, to hear about the gospel in the backdrop of the war. I was born in the war-torn country, but somehow from the early age, I sensed the presence of God. And I remember on the morning of the Tet Offensive in 1968, some of you might have been in Vietnam or heard about this. And I went on a ride with my father, and I was sitting on the back of the motorbike. I took an old image of the dead body of the North, young Vietnamese North soldier was sent to the South to take over. But they were shot down, so they were lying all over the street. There was blood, it's a gruesome image. I was 5 years old then, and those images, this had caused me to become fearful, despair, or frustrated of life, like people would say, the post-traumatic syndrome. Psychology would say that, but somehow that didn't occur to me. I began to seek for a God that is greater than I, that is more compassionate than what I see, and more transcendent than what I see here. It was later that I read John Bunyan that I realized that it was Christ that he gave me rest for my sorrow, and through his death, life. That was the powerful message for me. So I found life in the middle of death, and I found peace in the middle of war. I often heard people said and complain or raise the objection about the existence of God, and they said, if there is a God, then why there is so much suffering in the world? And if there is a God, why do I have to suffer so much? Because there are evil in the world, because I have to suffer so much, God must either not so powerful, not so caring, or not even exist. You see, the enemies come to destroy, to kill. He's just a thief. He cannot create anything. But Jesus came that we might have life and have it more abundantly. He's not only create, but he recreate. He takes the fragment, the broken fragment of our life, and he makes it into something meaningful, something beautiful, something useful. Not only for ourselves, but for the rest of the world. Because he said, you will be my witnesses of what I am doing in your life. Another incident that happened to me that I witnessed that showed me, that draw me near to God was when I was 10 years old. It was late in the evening. I was sleeping in my bed, and then suddenly I heard a big explosion. And then my sister woke me up, and then we found out that there was an ammunition warehouse in the city for some reason caught on fire and it began to explode. It was far away from my home that we can climb up on the rooftop and see from the distance a big fire was coming up. My sister was frightened, but my dad gathered us down into our living room, and we have family altar. And you know, that evening, the song that we sung, the hymn that we sang, was Constantly Abiding. And so every time there's a problem in my life, it's constantly abiding, Jesus, my Lord. Any period, and any transition period, any change will bring suffering in our life. We're living in information technology age now. Everything is changing us. Every 18 months, we have to adapt to the change. If we don't change, we become obsolete. It's dizzy. The computer that I bought 3 years ago, they come up with something else now. So it brings suffering, it brings pain in our life. And so it was painful for the during the 60s for Americans to pull out of Vietnam after commit 10 years of troop, of money, of your tax money in Vietnam. It was painful for them to pull out. And it was painful for President Nixon to make the negotiation with the North Vietnamese government that Americans would pull out with honor. But we know that they pull out if it's not smoothly and if it's a lot of pain. And it was without honor. And until this day, I met some American military officer, and they said Vietnam was the first war that the American ever lost. On April 1975, I was told by my parents that I need to pack up my bags, two bags, and get ready to leave the country in 24 hours. You see, my sister was working for the American consulate at that time. She was there for 10 years. And it was not safe for us to stay in Vietnam. And if we stay, we will be persecuted for either religious reason because we are Christian and a political reason because of connection with American. For a 12-year-old boy, in a sense, this is a great adventure. A chance to get out of the country to explore a new land. I was sitting on that plane, flying out of the Pacific Ocean, looking out the window of the beautiful blue sky, thinking about the next destination, America. Wow. What will I learn? What will I see? All the wealth that will be there before me. And then I asked my sister, what is America like? Because she had visited America, make a tour before we came over. That was 1 or 2 years before. And she looked at me, and until this day I still remember, and she said, we are now entering a place for many people. It's a heaven of material things. You can get a lot of things there. There's abundance of wealth. But if you're not careful, it will be a hell for spiritual growth. And at that time, I was a little bit puzzled. Hell and heaven in the same place? And it's not until later that I realized that she was just echoing the truth about the human condition right from the beginning until when Augustine said that God had made us for ourselves and we are restless until we rest in him. Nothing in this world will fulfill us. And I saw that in the life of many other of my Vietnamese American who came over here and got sucked up into the materialism, and their life, the spiritual life, were tragic. They have lost their soul in this land. My family was quite restless during the first year that we came here. That was a big change. Imagine we uproot from your community. My parents were active members in the church. They were mover and shaker of the Vietnamese church in Vietnam. Now they came over here, no home, no church, no family, no nothing. When they go to church, nobody understand them. They couldn't understand the sermon. So the first years, the first priority for them was to look for a place that there's a Vietnamese pastor and he's trying to plant a Vietnamese church so that their life would be meaningful, that they would bring their children up in the faith. And after 1 year of moving from the Midwest to the East Coast, we heard of a Vietnamese pastor was trying to plant a Vietnamese church in Lancaster. So they move up here. And that's how the Vietnamese church, and this picture you see, we established. And this church was one of the first church in North America that bought our own building after 5 years and sent our missionary all over the world. God worked in a mysterious way. While I was enjoying my new experience in America, attending Garden Spot, met people like Mary Lou, very American. This is how this community shaped me. Honesty. Remember, the lock at Garden Spot, we never have the lock. Make friends with my neighbor. I would come over to the house. Their mom would cook for me. My mom would share the acorns with them. We had a wonderful time. And during my senior year in high school, my friend encouraged me. She said, we need to sign up to go with Teen Mission, in international. And so I joined him, and we raised support. If you look back, there's a picture of me on the Penny Saver, 1981, I think. Yeah. New Holland missionary going to California desert to build a chapel. That was great. But it was with Teen Mission experience that I was challenged to take up the gospel to the world, that God saved me not only for myself to enjoy the good life in this, but there is a picture, a vision greater than what I see here. So I remember during my experience with Teen Mission, I dedicate myself into some type of full-time Christian work. At that time, I didn't realize what I'd be doing, but I felt, I prayed to God. I said, please, if this world is so dark, please send me to the darkest place of the world so that your gospel might shine brightly. I like my life to be kept. And many years later, God kept his God heard my prayer, my prayer, and he kept his promise. But that was great for me. But my brother, who was 11 years older than I am, and he was a soldier in the South Vietnamese Army. We had the ticket for him to leave Vietnam. At that time, my father came down and talked to him and said, get ready, we're going to leave the country. And being a dutiful, honorable soldier, he said, I have soldiers that follow me. How can I leave them? So he decided to stay, to be faithful, to be set a good Christian example. With that, it cost him 4 years in forced labor camp. When North Vietnamese took over, they would gather all these soldiers. There's no forgiveness, there's no peace, there's no mercy. Into the prison he went. And it was in prison camp. Some of you, if you see the movie, The Killing Field, that image, that was a condition similar to that what my brother was in. And in the prison camp, he made contact with other Christians. And how do they do this? They were sent out into the field and work, grow this food. And then he whistled the song, "How Great Thou Art." Another gentleman heard that. They gather, you too. They became Christian. They form a fellowship in the church, in the prison, in the camp. My aunt was in Vietnam at that time, and she was given the opportunity to visit him every so often. At the request of my brother, he said, bring me a compass and a map of this area. And with that compass and with that map, he escaped with a Christian friend. They make their way to Thailand. 1 year later, he was reunited with us in New Holland. Now, at that time, from the time that we left Vietnam, I remember not a single day that we didn't gather together and pray for family reunion. The chance of my brother to get out of Vietnam was near to impossible. He was in the middle of the jungle, and there's communists that control this gulag, that it's prison camp. And if he were to escape, they would shot him. So it's the the tactic is very wicked and horrible tactic that they use. But miraculously, because of prayer. So when my brother came over, that was like a spiritual renewal for my family. All of us realized that we was given another chance to be together. And the relationship in the family and God have used it incident to break through to our life, that He's real. He's there to answer our prayer. So the Bible became something that is practical, that is logical, that is real in our life. We was living it. So it was natural that I was support to go into the mission field. I was given chance to explore what God wants for my life. At a young man, 18 years old, I was wondering, yes, God is great, but what did He want me to do? The question of existence, how should I live? What should I do? How will I make my life count? It's not until when I listened to a lecture, three lectures by Oscar Guinness at a conference in Pittsburgh by Coalition for Christian Outreach. This is it's similar to InterVarsity or Campus Crusade for Christ, but this group started out from Penn State. And I remember that evening, Oscar Guinness shared with us that the three things that we need to know as we look into the future, you need to know your time, know your moment. And his message that evening was American hour. He said, 100 years ago, it was the British moment. And his ancestors have seized that moment and changed the world for Jesus Christ. Now is American moment. You need to know your time, get ready, and God will use you. I was challenged by that. Because, of course, my family, I saw how God is working in my family, how God working in New Holland. But this time, how God is working in the world, in China, and how God is using this man to change the world. So I was inspired by that. The second thing he said was calling. He wrote a book for every message that he wrote a book about American Hour. He wrote a book later on calling, but at this time he was giving out the message. And he said, you need to spend time to find out what your calling is. You are unique, and then God will use you. And then the last one is we need to change the style of our communication, how we communicate the gospel that will become effective. So with that, I said, wow, this is for me. I realized later on that Oscar was born in China, and he spent a brief time in concentration camp during World War II, and he came to the West. So his experience was similar to my experience, but I didn't realize that at that time. So I was so excited by this incident that I took a year off. I went up to New York City and I lived with my brother. At that time, my brother came over. He went to Bible college and was planning a Vietnamese church in Manhattan, New York. So I spent 1 year with him. I want to see what New York is like, what is the America in the urban setting. Was like. So I spent 1 year there. And then after 1 year, I saved enough money. I came back. I think globally, but I work locally. Came back to Lancaster, attend Bible college, went to the Vietnamese church, and that church later on support my ministry in Europe. It was at Lancaster Bible College that I met Dr. Lloyd Perry, wonderful man. It was toward the end of his life that he willing to take 8 or 10 pastoral students in his class, and I was among those students. And for 2 years, I learned from him to think logically, to think biblically, and to think practically. And that have shaped my thinking and my work in the past years. What's next? And so, after I finished my biblical training at LBC, 1 year later, my mom passed away. And because of pancreatic cancer, she sacrificed her life for our family. And I know if she continued to live, she continued to sacrifice. It's just the water flowing down. And at that moment, I spent that time with my mom for 3 months, and then she passed on. And then after she passed away, I was offered a position to work in a refugee camp in Hong Kong. So my missionary work actually began from that moment. Now, the Vietnam War was finished in 1975, that's where the war is over, but wave of refugee keep coming out of Vietnam. It's different waves. And in 1989, and the Berlin Wall fell. So these North Vietnamese this is the last chance for them to get out of Vietnam, because the international and the UN changed the policy. People in Vietnam, people in Eastern Europe no longer have that fear of persecution, because communism was not a force to be reckoned with. Things have changed, so they have to change the policy. So these people who went to Hong Kong, who sacrificed everything, who sold their house, they went to Hong Kong thinking that someday they would go to America or England or Canada, were told that they need to go back. They start the process of the policy of voluntary repatriation, meaning you need to go back. If not, they have forced repatriation. We will take you back. And that was a hopeless situation. So I was sent there to serve as a social interpreter for them, calm them down. So I work with the UN during the week, and on weekend, I know that the answer is the gospel of God. The future of Vietnam is not in the camp, it's in Vietnam. These people need to go back, but they need to go back with the gospel. So I spent time sharing the gospel with them, working with the young people. And the gospel bring hope in a hopeless situation. People commit suicide, people do crazy things. In a hopeless situation, these people accept the fact that their future is in Vietnam. So they went back after they became Christian. And some of them went to Bible college in Singapore after that and planted a Vietnamese church in Hanoi. And the kingdom of God is continuing, growing and expanding in spite of all this policy. So after 1 year of working in a refugee camp, I realized that the future of Vietnam was in Vietnam. And if I want to impact the Vietnamese, I need to go back to school. So I went back home again, worked locally, think locally. I went to Millersville and get my MA in English. After 3 years of relax, of having fun, of read wonderful literature, of Milton, of John Donne, of Shakespeare, all this great thoughts of the Western world have been influenced by Christians. See, I read literature to find out how I can commute the gospel effectively. And so after 3 years of that, I was back in Vietnam, in Hanoi, visiting the university. I was ready for Vietnam, but Vietnam was not ready for me. They thought that I came back as a spy sent by the CIA to report on them. So they said, "We don't want you." I said, okay. So I went back. Another uncertainty. What am I going to do? What is the future? Suddenly, one day, a missionary to the Vietnamese from Eastern Europe showed up in our church on a Wednesday evening that I was there. He said, there are Vietnamese in Budapest, in Eastern Europe. No one reached out to them. And I felt like this is an opportunity for me. I told him to please pray for me. I asked the church, please pray for me. They said, go, we support you. And I was there for 11 years. My friend in Hong Kong, when he heard me, he received a letter and he said that you've gone to Eastern Europe. He said, wow, you are like the spirit. You move everywhere. I said, if you follow the word of the spirit, he'll lead you. And he will take you to exciting places that you never dream of. And never in my wildest dream that I thought a Vietnamese in war-torn Vietnam would be preaching the gospel in Eastern Europe. Budapest is one of the beautiful cities in the world. I think it's rival with London and even Paris. But because they're so poor that the capital have been doesn't have that publicity. But it was the capital of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So they have their glory day. And at one time, half of a million Jews were living in Budapest. So Budapest was a city that was built by the Jews. And with a lot of envy, the Hungarians turned against them. And they was they went into the gas chamber. And that's what we have. So after 11 years in Budapest, I realized I need to go back and inspire young people, the next generation, to go, because the gospel needs to be passed on to the next generation. So I accept a position as youth pastor in Vancouver, Canada. Now, that place is rich, they have money, and children was growing up. But I felt their family and these young people were so sucked up in this materialism that they don't even think outside of their comfort zone. And their parents wouldn't even support them to even give any thought about going out to the mission field or to be responsible for the gospel. And so after 2 years for them, I said, it doesn't look good. So I said, goodbye. I went back to Lancaster. At that time, that was 2010. So I signed up and worked for the census office for 1 year, learning how to count and visit people and see the system in the local community. And then after that, the Lord opened the opportunity. The master degree in English that I got 20 years ago, I didn't even use, now came in handy. I was offered a job in Turkey. I went there and taught English for 1 year, which prepared the way for me to go to Saudi Arabia for 2 years. My experience in Saudi Arabia is unbelievable. What is it like living and working in Saudi? Saudi is a place that's very dark. And that is what I meant when I said, please send me to the darkest place in the world. It's 30 years later, 30-something, that he actually sent me to the darkest place. Physically, it's very hot. It's so hot that during the daytime, you don't want to go anywhere but the swimming pool. Emotionally, it's very dry because people kept to themselves, suspicious of each other. For the expat, it was very difficult. Mentally, it's empty because Saudi Arabia was not a place. It's a God-forsaken place. It's not until the turn of the last century that, with the boom of the oil, that they actually built roads and live in houses. Before that, they were living in tents. So there was nothing culturally They have to look up to Damascus, to Alexandria, to Baghdad for their teacher and their leaders. So there was nothing there. No one in the right mind would go to that place. And spiritually, it's a dead environment. This is a land where you was expected to work on Sunday and take a day off on Friday. 5 times a day before you want to get up, you would hear this prayer from the loudspeaker. 5 times a day you'll interrupt by this call to prayer. And if you want to go to the supermarket, you have to time yourself, because if you go at prayer time, they will kick you out of the supermarket. You have to wait for 20 minutes before you can come in. The man dressed in robe, the woman covered themselves. I asked my student, I said, I cannot believe how you would live in the place that the most beautiful object in the world, you just cover them up. And that's what we see in the West. With beauty, with wonderful people we display. And they said that if you have wealth, you want to keep it to yourself. So everything in Saudi Arabia is very hypocritical. It's all the form, but no spirit. You have religious police would go and chase people to go to the mosque for prayer. But if young people cross the red light, cause an accident, they wouldn't even care. And if someone stop you in the street, they would treat you, if you're black, you're hopeless. You have to take care of yourself. It's a very unjust society. It's a caste system. And yes, they still chop people in head at the chop square. If those people came from a poor country. Now, as an American, a Westerner, the worst thing they could do to me is kick me out of the country. So maybe one of the reasons why they didn't take me in this time is because they found out I'm a Christian. Who knows? But you need to live with it. It's a place of persecution for Christians. But in spite of that, young people grow up and they've been exposed to the internet and to the influence from the outside world. They know that life is different from outside. So that's why people like myself to come and share with them about American culture, Western culture, values. They quite eat. I have an audience. When they realize that you really care for them, you're not there just for the money, they will listen. And if you're willing to meet with them after hour, and then they look at me and they said, Mr. Nguyen, you are different. You spend time with us outside of class. You're even willing to go out after 9 o'clock. Most of the Westerners who come over here, they're afraid to go out because they fear that we would do something bad to them. And then it was those time that I spent with them. I really listened to the struggle, the problem, the suffering in their life. That is when the gospel penetrates. I don't have to bring the Bible there. They download the Bible on their phone, their mobile phone. They come to me and they ask me about a question about the gospel. So I need to be available and I need to be open to the struggle. So that is why, yes, it's difficult, but it's rewarding because you have a chance to influence the next generation. The killing, the explosion will stop if these young people know that there's a God of love, of mercy, and He can just change their life. In spite of all this persecution, God is moving and working in the underground church. Before I left and come back here, I met with the Ethiopian church underground. The most wonderful, loving people. They sacrifice so much. There's Pakistani, there's Filipino, there's other fellowship. You don't hear about that, because if you hear about it, the government will will go in and then persecute them. It's happened to the Korea church. So even it's a struggle to build a Christian community in that culture, in that place, but it's not impossible. And those people really covered your prayer. And I know God is working in spite of what we hear on the news. And God's way is mysterious. We'll be surprised in the future. So the challenge for us now is, how do we speak to these godless people that have been indoctrinated by the idea of if they blow themselves up and blow other people up, then they go to heaven? It's not as hopeless as we thought. I think these young people are reasonable. If we spend time with them, we speak to them, we'll change them. And that's why I felt I need to go back and reach those young people. Because at the university, Kingsall University, where I taught, there was one student that dropped out, that followed the voice of the invitation of the Taliban. He went to Yemen, and now he used his talent at a chemist to make bombs. And he was an underwear bomber that nearly almost blew up the one of the princes of Saudi. American is trying desperately to track down that fellow. And he become very sophisticated in his way of inventing and making it bomb. Is it a hopeless situation? To the world it is. But for us, it's not hopeless. Because from my experience, from my life, God, faith, hope, and love. And that is what we have. And that's what he gave us. And so thank you for giving me this time. And please continue to pray for me. I don't know what the Lord is trying to move in my life, this twist and turn right now, but I'm still waiting, and it's great to have this community for me to reflect, because life can only be lived forward, but can think, understand backward, and you gave me this time to reflect, to put out on paper. Perhaps a book will come out of this. And then for his kingdom, for his glory, because we are just sojourning on earth, aren't we? Thank you.